You can click on that and see where you can donate. And like I said, if you donate to the Year Two Pandemic, we'll send you a pandemic bandana. And there's a link for the Actors Fund, and you can donate there. It'll help us behind the scenes, LCSA, and also Together for Oregon. I don't know if we have any time left, but one of the things that happened during the pandemic, Jamie, is Together for Oregon started last May. It's a group of us that are all in the industry, and union and non-union came together, and we did a live broadcast sponsored by KGW, and we did an hour-long broadcast, and we raised money, and it went to different charities to help out people during the pandemic, and one of them was LCSA. And LCSA, oh gosh, I think they took care of 112 families.
Which is Labor's Community Service.
Community services. They took care of many families for the pandemic and got food to them because of Together for Oregon. And Together for Oregon is going to keep doing things to help our industry. So you can go on their website too and click the button and donate to them because you know that money will help all of us.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us, Rosetta. It's been an amazing story you've told to us this evening. Back to you, Jamie.
And that about wraps it up for tonight's Labor Radio. This Monday and every Monday from 6 to 6:30 on KBOO 90.7 FM.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate both of you very much, and I appreciate your show.
And you've been listening to Rosetta Bettitucci, the business representative of the International Alliance Theatrical Stage Employees Local 28. I'm Jamie Partridge. My co-host is Amanda Hill.
When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening. You are listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. My name is Emma, and I use she and her pronouns. And tonight we're here with Karen Campbell, the author of Falling, Hard Lessons, and the Redemption of the Woman Next Door. Karen, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Thank you, Emma. I'm pleased to be here.
Thanks. Karen, so can you tell me, before we get into your book, can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I'm a woman who has had a full life, a mother of two beautiful daughters. I'm in a committed partnership, and I had a professional career, and I had a car accident that led to a crime, and I ended up going to prison. And so that pretty much just changed everything in my life, and it was like the rug was pulled out from under me, and by my poor decisions, and that's where the book begins.
So your book is your book, which again is Falling, Hard Lessons, and the Redemption of the Woman Next Door. Is that about your experience of being incarcerated?
Yes, the book begins in the walk to jail. Actually, the first steps into the jail, which you start, and then you go into prison eventually. And I remember, you know, these two men on each side of me with grips on my elbows, and I had shackles around my waist and a chain dragging along the floor to another woman who was behind me, and the assault of the doors and the slam and the echo. And I thought, oh, so that's why they call it the slammer. And it starts there and goes into the first day that I fell. That's how the name comes up, is when the day you go to prison is the day you fall.
Yeah. I've heard that first month of intake is like just the hardest month.
It's just such an assault on everything you've known before, and it is a grim look at what is the result of what you've done. And you meet people that you wouldn't have thought you would be next to. You are terrified, you're guilt-ridden, you know, you wonder, how is my family surviving? You have no communication with the outside, it's a complete, it's just horrible. It's, you know, the beginning of your sentence is truly the worst.
When you were incarcerated, you mentioned that you have two daughters.
Yes, they were teenagers. They were 13 and 16 when the car accident happened that led to my prison sentence. And, you know, that is a rough time for girls or boys. It doesn't matter. You are at a school when everyone is trying to be accepted and figure out who you are, and suddenly your mother is, you know, going to prison, and all the things that go with that complication, and the humiliation that they went through was just absolutely horrible. I was really lucky that they still wanted me in their life. We made phone calls and you know, wrote letters, and they would send me pictures and drawings, and they keep me posted up on their progress in school. And they never said how bad it was for them. They spared me that. And the visits when they came were, oh, Emma, they were just so beautiful and excruciating at the same time, that you have this gorgeous, lovely, elegant child standing in this room that you never would have put them in. And they're brave, and they're trying so hard to show up for you. And any mother that you talk to, I'm sure, would agree that, you know, you can't live without a visit, and yet you just feel so bad that they have to come. It kept us together, much more so than letters and phone calls. Really, really, it's important to have that outreach, physical presence with your children or your family members.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you mentioned in our pre-chat interview that you lost your husband at the time that this happened also. That must have been incredibly traumatizing as well.
Yes, I was life-flighted from the scene, and so I didn't know. I was out of it for a while. I didn't know that he had died, and my daughters were telling me that I was signing with my hand, T-O-M, and I didn't know, and they waited until I could physically handle the news, and I mean, it was at my hand. It was devastating, and he was larger than life. He was a skier and an interesting, fully alive human being. And he would always joke, like, you know, oh, I've lived all my nine lives. And he was kind of wild, you know. Sometimes you go after the wild ones. And I think he would have been very surprised that that's how it ended up for him. So it was a great tragedy, a loss for many.
Yeah. So suddenly you find yourself one day, had you ever been in prison before?
Oh, heavens no. Susie Cream Cheese.
So you found yourself, you had lost your husband and your daughters. Your daughters lost for a while. They lost their mother and their father on the same day. That must have been just really challenging for them.
Yeah, it really was. The one good thing that strengthened their relationship was with their biological father, and he really stepped up. And so I think that might have been one thing that came out of it that was good. And I think, you know, you've got these women who are hoping that someone will step up. Can somebody please just help me raise these children? And you know, this is a difference to me between men and women. And in prison, is women come with children and with families and responsibilities, and they're the one who you know, makes dinner. And, you know, when a woman is taken out of a family situation like that, it's not only physically and emotionally devastating, but it just throws the whole a support system off balance. People have to scramble for how to get their lives back on track and go forward.
You're listening to KBOO Community Radio. We're talking tonight with Karen Andrea Campbell, the author of Falling, Hard Lessons in the Redemption of the Woman Next Door. Karen, what inspired you to write your book?
I can think of the three first women I met, Tizzy, Buzzcut, and Silver. I was back in those days of jail, and I was terrified. You know, before I went in, I went to Powell's, and I researched every book. Orange is the New Black had not been written. And there were things like, well, they do things like fecal boomerangs and the soap in the shower. And I thought, oh my God, what's going to happen to me? And I learned on the very first few days, I met those three, and one just walks up to me and said, look, Snow White, don't turn your back to the room. And from then on, they schooled me in where to stand, how to act, how not to stare. The people I feared more than anything ended up just stepping up for me and kind of taking me under their wing. And they shared their vulnerabilities and who they were and, how they're feeling. And I had never expected that. So when you ask why I wrote the book, it's I wrote it for them, When I hear, I just recently, it went from Amazon yesterday to Barnes & Noble to Target to these other big companies and things like that. And I'm still working on the local stores, but it just means so much to me that I'm honoring their voices and I need to free them. I need to get them over the wire so people understand who a female inmate is. If they just perhaps would read the book, they'd understand that it's not what they think. It's not, it's people who are, just rotten people from day one. It's so important that, and also when I started writing the book, it took so many different shapes. I started off just writing down every word they said. I walked around with little scraps of paper in my pocket because I'd never been anywhere like this. It was like being on the moon, And so after a while, people knew I was writing and they'd come over and tell me their story and I would write things down. And it was those direct quotes and those stories that I put in a big shoebox and ended up being a mattress box after a while. When I got home, and that's I took them all out and I started to bring out their voices and put them in piles and just started writing. And I couldn't not do it. I had to, I promised I would.
Wow, that's incredible. I know from the time that I work volunteering in Coffee Creek, I only hear like a slice of probably of the stories that you hear. And the women's stories just are so inspiring. I mean, the women in Coffee Creek are just such amazing, strong people. And I love hearing their stories of redemption, their stories, their life stories of how they got to the place where they're at, what they're hoping to do when they get out, all of the things that are positive about them and how their lives are changing. And also how sometimes justice has been served and people are still imprisoned. And that's the injustice, is like when you've learned the lesson that you needed to learn and you've done your time, but you're still in jail because of mandatory minimums or, sentences that are kind of disproportionate to the crime.
I think that you are the perfect person to be in there because all that reform business is going forward because people are starting to look around at exactly what you said. And, all I've got is the stories. And if I can humanize these people, then maybe people like you can pick up the trail and get reform going and have sentences that involve some sort of, actually physical changes, mental, emotional changes. A lot of times the women you were talking about, they have to take their own initiative. and go to church services or learn from people or try. There's no set, rules for while you're in prison. First, you're going to take account for what you do, and then you're going to think about it, and then you're going to plan on how you're going to come up against your triggers. You are housed. You are warehoused. And there are a few handful of programs. For example, you can fight to get into the hair design program or something like that, where the teacher really works on you personally. But there are so many wasted hours of people just navel gazing, and the women you're talking to in your group who are taking the steps to, okay, how could my life work? It's just vital, and they have to do it on their own without any sort of outside resources. Like, they have no access to looking up housing or looking up jobs. I mean, they just have to wait until they get out and hope for the best. There's some things wrong here with the reform system, and the fact that you're going in and talking to these people and getting their voices out over the wire and humanizing them. I mean, that's our work, Emma. I think that's what we must do.
Mm-hmm. How has your book been received, Karen?
Oh, it's just unbelievable. I've had people say, I can't read it at night anymore because it's haunting, but I love it and I can't stop. I've had a really, really positive response. The people in the book, both the people who were friends from the outside or family and those who have been incarcerated, feel heard and seen. And that's what really matters to me.
Yeah. Yeah, all of those stories are so important. I mean, hearing about what's happening inside, and the three that you mentioned earlier in the interview, are any of them still inside, or have they been released?
Oh, they're all out. And, I see, there's some of my other favorites was Sally and Mittens and Hippie Chick and Sinful and Blondie. And, I just think of them, and Sinful is still in, Angel's still in, and I think of them all the time. Do you know, this is a tough one for me, because Sinful was such a mentor. She was so strong. She was like a Viking, and she walked down the tier and her hair would sway back and forth. She was just stunningly powerful woman. And one night there was a fire alarm, and she woke me up, and she was, hurry, you got to get up. We got to go outside. We got to go. And I thought, what? Are we going to burn? I was terrified. She goes, looks at me, and with this most soft, intense face, which I'd never seen on her, because she says, the stars, the moon, we get to see the moon. And it was just breathtaking to go outside and stand and look at the lifers who were just turned face up, silent, just staring. And I promised her that I would look at the moon all the time and always think of her. And I do. I do. So here's to the moon and the stars in Bulagacha.
What was, Karen, what was the best thing about getting out?
Oh, hugging your child. You could sit on the couch next to them, touch them for as long as you wanted. You could get up and take a knife and sharp edges and slice a bite of real cheese. And first it was just, those sensory deprivations kind of met. I had a bath. And then after that, you just walk around in this state of gratitude of, being able to stand on carpet and be in this world and start your momentum of taking all those plans and those hopes and those, I'm going to do this and I'm going to get this job and I'm going to get my bus pass and all that. And to put those things in motion is just a privilege. And it's difficult, though. It's so very difficult. It's wonderful to go out and enjoy nature, but to put one foot forward after the other and put yourself back into a job and out into the world is so set up against you because of your crime and your background. There's very few people who would give you any sort of, even an interview.
Mm-hmm. How was your transition to the outside world then? It sounds like it was challenging.
Oh, it really is. I had the background of my cosmetology while I was in Coffee Creek, because I went through that program and I was able to keep my manual skills, and I applied again in the physical therapy career that I had before. And I would be hired and they would say, oh no, we'd love to have you. And I said, well, here's a curveball. I've been in prison. And now what's happening in the world is that these national human resources companies and the boss might want to hire you because they might believe in your redemption, but you will not be hired because you have this prison record. And there's so many people who want work. We are the first people to get kicked out of the job pool. And, you know, how do you find housing? How do you find, you know, people, if you've got your background is out there for landlords to look at? I mean, it is so difficult. And there's only a few resources, you know, for people who are paroling, because there are people who are ill and there's children who need, you know, glasses. And, you know, we are way down the list of priority charities, that's for sure.
Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that. We're talking with Karen Campbell, the author of Falling. Karen, you did about 6 years at Coffee Creek?
So yes, I did 6 years and 3 months. And I got out on April Fool's Day, Emma. It's a way to remember every year, a little inventory.
Yeah. And are you past parole now and everything?
Yes, I went through that without any trouble right away.
That's wonderful. Karen, where would you like your book to go? Like, who are you hoping will have a chance to read your book?
Everyone. Even if prison isn't your thing, it still is a part of your world, still a part of your community and your government and your expenses in your countries all over the world. It's just really important for us to consider inmates as a wonderful work resource, as people who can turn things around. And if we don't disenfranchise them so greatly, then they can join back in so much easier. So who doesn't need to read about that, you know? The children of the women who are incarcerated need to read this book, because they're going to read about my daughters who suffered and how angry they were at times, and they will be justified. And partners and, you know, anybody who's involved with prison in a way, whether it's work, you know, I met some wonderful staff members who were so supportive. And if it weren't for them, I don't know what I would have done. I mean, it just takes one of them to see you, and it makes everything worthwhile and bearable. And, you know, who doesn't need to read this? And, you know, I got to tell you, Emma, I started off as a guidebook and I wrote and, you know, and my editor kept on saying, nope, not enough blood on the page. And finally, I just threw it all out there and hiding nothing. And if I can go ahead and do that for someone, then maybe they would be willing to talk about themselves and we can all begin going forward and learning.
That's great. Thank you so much for sharing that. Karen, what does the future hold for you? What are you hoping to do coming up in your life?
Well, you know, I got to be honest with you. Now that this book is finally done after 9 years of writing it and rewriting it, I honestly, I'd like to just take a walk and draw something or, you know, just be present with my family and take a good look at the process. Really brought out the fact that this is, I mean, I didn't ever admit for so long, Emma, that I was damaged from prison. I just covered it up and kept going. And when I realized the damage that a person goes through, I finally admitted it. And now I am free. It took 9 years later for me to feel free, because I didn't dare admit how bad it was. I was afraid I wouldn't make it. I wouldn't go forward. And so everything is what I want to do now. Staring at a tree. I mean, I'm walking around just like a goof. I'm so happy. Finally, I talked to people. I wasn't making friends. I was isolating because I was ashamed. And, you know, I'm I've just got the wide open eyes now, and so that's what I want to do, is just join in society and not put myself in my own cage, and to try to be useful and helpful in any way I can.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. What do you think are some of the positive messages from your book that could really help people who are either incarcerated or have someone who they love who's incarcerated? Like, what are some of the messages that your book has to help give them strength?
Well, I think that they would know that you have to have a lot of grit, and you have to have a lot of patience, because you have to go over and over and over and not get kicked down. And you have to be tough, and you have to walk the line. And if you're somebody who uses drugs and all those kinds of things, you have that extra thing against you. It is not easy. And you have to do everything you can while you're incarcerated, so that you're strong and you've got your tools, you know, whether it's meditation or praying or AA or something, you're going to need them.
Mm-hmm.
You really are. I think that it's, I'm not sure I answered your question completely on that one.
Oh no, that was great. Thank you so much. And then when people get out, what are some things that like are really good tips to help survive once you've gotten out and you're back on your own?
I was lucky enough to go through a class that was offered through Mercy Corps Northwest that kind of got you ready to be back in business. It was like a business school to put your mind right. And so what I learned from that is I need a discharge plan, and I have actually written one, and I'm gonna send it to you, because I think it's missing from the prison experience. Like, for example, while you're still in there, instead of getting, you know, a pack of Little Debbies every day at canteen, why don't you just save that money, because you're gonna need to ride the bus for a long time. Or you're going to have to buy groceries. Your first and last down in an apartment is much more important than, you know, reconstituted beans and, you know, ghetto burritos in the microwave. So starting right while you're inside, you need to start a list of how to get out, and how to get that plan, and how to get tough, and how to make the right decisions over and over while you're incarcerated. And then when you get out, it's simple things like get a bus pass, get a yoga mat, get, you know, accumulate a few things so that you can go forward, and then, you know, go get a library card. It's just kind of, you've got to have a plan, and you've got to write it down, so that when you're floundering, you've got a list and you can go back and you get out of your head and you just take the next best step.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like having family support or just having any kind of support really makes all the difference.
It does. I was lucky on that account. I had a Jerry in my book, who coincidentally is coming to visit me today for the first time. She gave me a place to live. And I mean, it's just that one thing. If we had a place to live that we knew that we could live in, it's so fundamental. Like, I was on the telephone with Hippie Chick the other day, just checking in with her, and she's, dude, oh, and she's telling me something. It's just the same old joyful laughing hippie chick that I knew. But then she called me another day and she says, dude, somebody stole my tent and all my stuff. And I thought, you know, it's horrible. It's just, mm-hmm. It's hard for everyone. I mean, there's people who are camping right next to her who have not been to prison. So there's a lot of disenfranchised out there, isn't there?
Yeah. Well, tonight we've been talking with Karen Campbell, the author of Falling. Karen, if people would like to find out more about your book, or if they would like to reach out, is there a way that they can do that?
There's two ways that they can do that. One is, of course, you can get the book. You said Amazon. It's coming to local stores within the next month. Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart. So the book, by all means, read the book. Get the book for anybody in your family who needs to understand what's going on. And The other thing that that we could do to, you know, reach out to people like that is, just be curious about what's happening in your own community too, and volunteer and just dig in somewhere. Soup kitchens.
Make a difference where you can.
Yeah. And then, you know, maybe you'll get a connection and you'll learn something, and, you know, and I think we all just have to step up.
Well, Karen, it's been a real pleasure talking to you tonight here on Prison Pipeline. Your book just sounds absolutely amazing. I'm definitely going to order it. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
Give my love to the women inside and tell them that it's all here for them. There's still going to be stars in the sky and avocados, and it'll all be here for them. Look forward to seeing them on the outside.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Can't get